Hello, everyone. Today, we're lucky enough to have Franco Terrazano from the Canadian Taxpayers Association. Welcome, Franco.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Hey, so, you know, I got an opportunity, and I've been on your site before, and I got an opportunity to kind of go through it again. I was amazed at the number of campaigns you guys are working on. So you want to tell us a little about what's hot for the Taxpayers Association of Canada?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been working on a ton of campaigns, and we've come off a very big successful one as well, right? Like, our biggest campaign for about a decade plus now has been against the carbon tax, right? We've been arguing, like, look, the carbon tax was all pain, no gain, right? It would make your life more expensive, make it more expensive for you to fuel up your car to get to work, right? Make it more expensive for you to heat your home during the winter months. And of course, also just make it more expensive for you to buy groceries, because the cost of the carbon tax goes throughout the entire supply chain. But like, the problem is that a carbon tax on Canadians, that doesn't reduce emissions in places like China or Russia or India or the United States. So, you know, that was one of our biggest campaigns. You know, ordinary citizens push back and force the Liberal government to end their own consumer carbon tax in Ottawa. So that was a very successful campaign. But like, the big campaign that we're working on right now is stop the debt, right? Because government debt, especially in Ottawa, is out of control, right? A baby born today, she is crying because she's already on the hook for about $30,000 in federal government debt alone.
Oh, no, I know. It's incredible. You know, and for a lot of Canadians don't realize, you know, we came out of COVID, all right, and we came up with this massive debt on an annual basis, you know, last year, roughly, what, $62 billion or $60 billion. And it looks like we're going to climb again this year based on all the commitments we're making now. How do we stop this insanity? How do we go back to where we're not talking about the B word anymore? And go to maybe the B becomes about balanced budgets again?
Well, that would be great. And that's really the end goal, right? And here, let me just take a little step back through time here, right? To the before the pandemic days. So when Justin Trudeau first became prime minister, the federal debt stood at about $600 billion. Within a decade, Trudeau brought that $600 billion debt tab all the way up to about $1.2 trillion, right? So let that sink in. For the entire history of Canada before Trudeau, the government added about $600 billion of debt. In the span of less than 10 years, Trudeau doubled that debt. And the problem is twofold. Number one, right, Canadians are going to be, or Canadians' kids and grandkids are going to be making payments on that debt for the rest of their lives. That's unfair. But the second problem hurts us right here, right now. And because of the massive debts, the government is now wasting more than $1 billion every single week paying interest on that debt, right? And what's $1 billion? Well, $1 billion is a brand new hospital. So every week we are losing out on a brand new hospital because that money is going to pay interest on the federal debt.
Yeah, no, I get you. You know, and it's interesting. You know, you look at $1 trillion, right? We're not a big country. You know, I tell the people all the time, we are not a big country population wise. So, and I know we want to act like a big country, and we want to act like we have a massive amount of capabilities to fund all these projects, but we have to kind of come to some reasonable thinking. And I think, you know, we coming out of COVID, we got going on this. Okay, we're okay with deficits now. We're okay with $60 billion in deficit. We're okay to climb again. And you know, it's interesting. We had on the other day some people from the Fraser Institute, actually from Ottawa, and we were talking about military spending. And we said, okay, you know, add on sort of the new commitments to that, whatever we end up spending. There's no firm commitment on that right now. And, you know, to the existing deficit, what are we going to end up at? So how do we rejig this? And how do we stop having the provinces? This is the kind of crazy part that I can't figure out. How do we stop having the provinces looking for transfer payments to increase that deficit? So, okay, provinces, let's kind of pull back a little. Let's stop, because it seems like, you know, and I was looking at your site, you know, there's some really interesting ones, whether it be, you know, projects like FIFA or whatever, where all of a sudden, every time someone needs money, they say, well, let's get the federal government involved. And then the federal government steps up and they strike another check, you know, okay, that project can go forward. And there seems to be no appetite for no. You know, why don't we just say no to some of these projects? We say no, then we stop. And then, because if you look at the, you know, the financial statements, I used to be a CPA in my old life. We look at the financial statements. A lot of those deficits are coming because we keep transferring all this money down to the provinces to keep them with these crazy projects. So uploading, downloading, lending money to the provinces, funding projects, we got to stop.
Well, you know, okay. So there, as you know, right, there's this big perverse incentive in government and among politicians, right? And that's this simple intuition is that you're going to be more wasteful spending wise when you're spending other people's money, right? When it's your own money that you worked hard to earn, you're going to be more conscious of the decisions that you're making with those dollars and cents. But politicians and government bureaucrats who are essentially, not essentially, they are spending other people's money, they are less constrained by that simple fact of life, right? So there's a couple things that have to happen. Number one, there has to be some laws around spending and laws around debt accumulation. And we saw some of these laws come into place, especially in the 90s. And we saw them like throughout the different provinces, right, where there's taxpayer protection legislation, right, outlawing debts and deficits outside of extreme circumstances, limitations on how much spending can go up every single year, right? Those are the hard, concrete laws that should be put into place to limit the frivolousness of politicians and bureaucrats who are spending other people's money. Now, the other thing that has to happen is more of a cultural shift, right? So, and I'm really talking about a cultural shift among our political and government leaders, because the problem with what they're doing right now is that if they don't make tough decisions today, really tough and bad decisions are going to be forced on them tomorrow. And we saw this happen throughout the 90s, all levels of government, all governments of all different political stripes. Let me just give you a New Democrat example that happened in Saskatchewan, right? The Saskatchewan government let its deficits balloon so out of control that an NDP government in Saskatchewan in the 90s was forced to close down 50 hospitals across that province. And that's a perfect example of how it's not so much political ideology, but the forces acting on governments through higher interest payments that will really force politicians of all political stripes to make really, really tough decisions in the future if they don't make some of the tough decisions today.
No, no, I'm with you. Totally with you. Hey, so talk to me a little bit. You know, I see on your site, basically, FIFA. Let's talk about that for a minute. I was really curious. So, you know, looks like you guys want some reining in of spending on that one.
Well, we don't think that taxpayers should be on the hook for FIFA at all. Right. We don't think that. And look, I don't think that's a good use of taxpayers' money to hold, you know, essentially a couple soccer games. Right. Like think about how much money is going into this. And, you know, I'll actually bring back an example that on a referendum that I led when I was in Calgary. And that was a referendum against the Winter Olympics. And, you know, we were fortunate enough. We had the backing of the people that we were successful in stopping that Olympic bid boondoggle. But it, the principles are the same. Right. Like, look, when you have governments that are massively in debt, like the Ontario government, like the BC government and the federal government, there's no way that taxpayers' money should be going essentially so wealthy people can attend sporting events. Like, that's just a fundamental bad use of scarce tax dollars.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So as a Torontonian, I watched that kind of evolve. And, you know, it's amazing how it started, you know, at such a low number, you know. FIFA's coming and it's going to cost you X, right? Now, what is it escalated to? It's like in the hundreds of millions, right?
Yeah, I don't have the exact figure off the top of my head, but it's absolutely astonishing. And I'm glad you brought up the cost overruns, because this is what always happens, right? Politicians, they want to host a press conference and they want to be like, look at all this, you know, this great deal that we're getting. And then months go by, oops, the bill is more. Months go by even more, oops, the bill went up again. Sorry, taxpayers, you're left with this massive debt.
Right. So we ended up with John Tory. Remember, that was a John Tory announcement. And then next thing you know, he's gone. Olivia comes in. you know, we're getting the news. Well, you know, I took over, but it's not going to cost this. It's going to cost this. And then recently, again, we're getting it again. When, you know, when does the buck stop? You know, when do we actually say, you know, someone's got to be accountable for this, right? And I agree with you that, you know, passing laws that actually keep this in check needs to happen. But how do you make it happen? So how are you guys, you know, always challenging to figure out how to create a big enough, let's call it not a dirty word, but a lobby to get this enacted so you stop these things happening. So what is the, I know, you know, you create a site, you guys are active, you know, what can people do to get involved to make these changes?
Well, let me just start with our political philosophy, okay? So, you know, one of my favorite premiers of all time, maybe my favorite premier, is Ralph Klein, right? The former premier who was in Alberta during the 90s. He held up that big, beautiful sign in 2004, and it said paid in full, right? The Klein government in Alberta paid down the debt. And let me just like start by saying that in the early 90s, Alberta's finances were a mess, right? Like they were a mess. And the Klein government, they came in, they put in balanced budget legislation, laws requiring certain debt repayment over time. And that allowed Klein to hold up that sign in 2004 after more than a decade of very tough decisions from that government. Now, the reason I bring up Klein is, now I'm going to paraphrase, but he said something to the extent of, the job of a successful politician is to figure out where the parade is going and get in front. Okay. So the reason that I bring that up is because our job is to try to, you know, create a mass of people who want the government to act in, you know, the right way for taxpayers, to respect taxpayers' money. So we try to create that parade to force politicians who want to get reelected or get elected to be able to do so, in a sense, right? So we create the mass, and then with that mass, we force politicians who want to get reelected to adopt taxpayer-friendly policies. Very similar way as what we did with the carbon tax fight. You know, about a decade ago, it was really only two organizations who were fighting carbon taxes. Number one was the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and number two was the Bradwell government in Saskatchewan. But, you know, a lot of the other provinces were bringing in carbon taxes, right? I believe it was the Wynne government in Ontario brought in a form of carbon tax. Of course, you had the Trudeau Liberals in Ottawa who brought in the national carbon tax. And I remember, you know, when I first moved to Ottawa about 4 years ago, I remember people saying, Franco, you're crazy. There's no way politicians will get elected unless they run on a carbon tax. Well, isn't it funny how things change, where now the only way for a politician to get elected is to oppose carbon taxes, right? So that's how we kind of create the momentum using, you know, allowing CTF supporters to join other fellow tax fighters to push politicians in the right directions for taxpayers.
Yeah, well done. No, and you know, great, you know, before we leave, you know, just to mention to everyone, please visit the site, donate and participate, because this is a great site and a good initiative. You know what? I wanted to, Ralph Klein, you know, so let's talk a little bit about that, because that's an interesting one. The end of his, talk a little bit about, you know, why his, you know, premiership came to an end and, you know, what we're learning now.
Well, I think there's a couple lessons that we can learn from the Klein era, and I'll go from the one lesson from the beginning, one lesson from the end. So a lesson from the beginning, before they're really exercising this fiscal restraint, the Klein government did something quite noble, right? Where it cut the it cut the ministers' budgets and also the pay of politicians and government bureaucrats. Right. So what they said is like, look, we need to have the moral authority to actually sell savings to the public. So everyone needs to take a cut. Everyone needs to take a cut. I mean, the Klein government, they ended the pension plans for MLAs in Alberta. Right. So they showed leadership by example by tightening their own belts. And another way that the Klein government handled the government union bosses, because as you'll know, that is always one of the tougher groups to oppose to force cuts. Well, the Klein government said, look, there's a media scrum right out here. I'm going to tell the media, you guys either take a 5% pay cut or we're going to lay off more government employees. You can make that decision, right? So that was one of the way that the Klein government was able to sell spending cuts to Albertans, by showing leadership within the government itself. Now, the second lesson from the Klein government is a little bit of a bad one. It's a warning, right? Because once Klein held up that sign, paid in full in 2004, after that happened, the progressive conservative spending in Alberta ballooned out of control, right? So it kind of shows a lesson, the need for eternal vigilance. Because just because a government does something good in the early days, you have to stay vigilant to keep the government doing good stuff in its later days.
Right. And then COVID, remember the whole COVID debacle that hit and all that craziness. And, you know, we're still kind of not wrapped up our whole review of COVID spending, you know, and it came back up, last week? It was in the news quite a bit. You know, is there any summary of what was spent in COVID or review? Go back, recap. Again, we haven't done that yet, right? So,
well,
still,
and there was crazy amount of waste and unaccountability happening during COVID, right? Like, you might remember hearing that $32 billion of the COVID subsidies, $32 billion went to ineligible or questionable recipients, right? You had the CERB and subsidies like the CERB, you had it handed out to 1,500 people who were in jail, right? 700 people not living in Canada. 400 children under the age of 15. It even went to 391 dead people, right? So clearly there was a crazy amount of waste there. And one of the big areas of waste that everyone will remember is ArriveCan. Remember ArriveCan, that simple app, it launched with an initial price tag of $80,000. It ballooned all the way up to $60 million, right? And what do the government executives working on that app do? How do they hold themselves accountable? They took $340,000 in bonuses.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and after the review, you know, the gentlemen who were involved with the company actually just got suspended for 7 years from being awarded a government contract. And I think it's probably almost up now. They're back in play. So the two gentlemen that were lobbyists, IT individuals who worked from their basement, who took home $20 million. So yeah, no, I'm with you. That's craziness. But again, the same type of review we need to go through, and we need to get the legislation in place that will stop that from happening. You know, my worry right now, and I don't know if you're feeling it, my worry is this tariff thing. Like, honestly, this tariff discussion and all the panic around tariffs. The other night I'm sitting there and I'm listening to the U.S. ambassador to Canada, and he comes on, he says, hey, you know, by the way, Canada's effective average tax rate for tariffs is 5%. The CBC, you know, interviewer, he says, what do you mean? He says, well, you know, you take the USMCA, COSMA, you take all those things out, you take the 15% that's left, you have some large items that are in on the tariff side. They're important, but quite frankly, we're at 5%. You know, we're running around, you know, having all these discussions like, you know, the world is ending. And then if you read Stephen Murin's papers, you know, that were written because the head economist from the U.S., the trickle down effect to the consumer, what is it? So, you know, not that it's not important, not that industries aren't impacted. And I think we have to be cautious to brush it with a broad stroke. But we also have to be cautious not to panic and go running around throwing money everywhere to try to take care of a problem that we need to see what the impact is first.
Sorry for interrupting, but I just wish that, you know, the media, you know, or political elites or whatever, the talking heads, I wish they would just pay as much attention on how much our own governments are taxing us compared to how much, you know, another government is imposing tariffs essentially on its own citizens, right? Like, if you look at the average Canadian family, not a rich Canadian family, the average Canadian family, you know, more than 42% of their total income is going to taxes, right? Like, that is disgusting. It is disgusting that the average family's biggest cost is not food, it's not clothing, it's not housing. It is taxes. And that taxes cost the average family from our own governments more than what they spend on food, housing, and clothing combined. So, you know, I'm glad you brought up the tariff and you know, all the stuff that's going around. I just wish that these, you know, political elites, these talking heads would just focus a fraction of their attention on how much governments in Canada are taking from their own citizens.
No, I agree. You know, I was the other day, I did another show and I said, you know, my biggest wish right now is that our whole government at every level would just stay home for a while and deal with domestic policy. Like, you know, we really want to, again, I know we want to pretend we're a G7 country. We're not in that category anymore, but like, let's stop traveling around, having these meetings in other countries. Let's come home, deal with our domestic policy for a while, get it under control, deal with all the issues at hand, and then we can start to move out and have other discussions on trade with other countries. But first, you know, first things first, we have new governments in power all throughout Canada. We need to actually get them to deal with the issues at hand, such as taxes and the large tax burden, which unfortunately, I think a lot of Canadians right now are feeling a little beat down. You know, when I travel around and I talk to people, I think they're giving up. And that's a shame, especially, you know, younger Canadians. I think they're really feeling the pain and wondering what's next in the country. And even a lot of new immigrants that I'm crossing paths with on a daily basis, you know, they're starting to ask the question, do I go back?
Well, you know, one little point comes to mind when you're talking about domestic versus international concerns. And that's also like just the sheer amount of money that our federal government spends abroad, right? Like if you look at our international assistance or foreign aid or whatever you want to call it, in the most recent year that data is available, the federal government spent $11 billion on foreign aid in 1 year. Okay, I went through each department's budgets just so I can compare. So $11 billion in foreign aid. That same year, the government spent $6 billion through the entire Department of Veterans Affairs. Oof. Right? Let that sink in. The government spent almost twice as much on foreign aid as it did through the entire Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. And well, and that, you know, that's your problem, right? That's one of your big problems. But again, we spend all this time on foreign. It seems like it's become super trendy to just spend time on foreign affairs and not talk about domestic. And so it's easy. And quite frankly, you know, you can jump on a plane, you can go to France, you can jet off to Italy, you know, you can have these great meetings, you know, shake hands, but, you know, back home, what's happening? And, you know, it's interesting because you guys are talking, you know, I see in your campaigns, you're talking a little about media. So today, you know, thank you for taking the time with us. But, you know, one of the reasons we love these podcasts is we can dig into the issues a little more. Whereas mainstream media, quite frankly, you know, it's a soundbite. It's, you know, the prime minister is in India. The prime minister is here. Governor's meetings are there, right? They're great sound bites, but they don't get enough content, you know, and what we're trying to do, which I appreciate you coming aboard, is we're trying to get a little bit more conversation like we're having today around the key issues and the background to the issues. So I really appreciate you taking the time. Before we leave, I just wanted to, you know, a little bit of history. So, you know, the Canadian Federation, Taxpayers Federation, right? How did you guys evolve and tell me a little bit about it? Cause I'm sure people will want to understand a little more there. If they're not on the site, tell us what kind of started it and kicked it off and why, and then basically who the group is, like who, you know, other than yourself,
yeah,
which I've enjoyed meeting today. Tell me sort of how it evolves.
Well, yeah. So, you know, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation has actually been around for more than three decades now, right? We started in the very early 90s, and a lot of the tension, the taxpayer tension, really revolved around three things. Number one, massive debts, right? Massive debts in the provinces and at the federal level, right? In the late 80s, early 90s. Then there was also just like different corporate subsidies that were favoring Eastern provinces versus Western provinces, right? You'll remember the reform era and a lot of the prairie anger over some of this stuff that was going on. But then finally, too, a lot of it had to deal with the GST, right? The sales tax that was brought in. So there was a lot of different sparks that really ignited and form the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. But look, we've been fighting for more than 30 years now. One of our most famous things that we do is the debt clock. right? You even had former prime minister, or I guess he was the finance minister at the time, Paul Martin, say something to the effect like that damn clock, you know, that damn clock. And he was talking about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation's debt clock, where we have this big truck and we have this digital counter that just shows the federal government's debt going up in real time. Right. And we bring it across the country. And so it's a lot of fun and a good way to put pressure on politicians to rein in the debt and to show Canadians like, this is your money. This is how much you owe in government debt. But we've also been very successful on other issues like democratic accountability, right? Fighting for recall legislation, referendum legislation, which has been successful in Western provinces. We'd like to get that all across Canada. And then, of course, we're also, you know, very big and very instrumental in one of the key policy fights over the last couple of years that I mentioned a couple times, the carbon tax, right? Fighting it since day one, even when not many other groups or many politicians wanted to talk about it. So we've been fighting for a very long time, but we'll always stick to our core mission. And that's fighting for lower taxes, less government waste, more government accountability. And you know, one other thing that I will say is that we won't take any money. Never have, never will, from any government, political party, or anywhere outside, from anyone outside of Canada, right? So we are here to fight for Canadian taxpayers and not beholden to any government or any political party.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you, Franco. And you know what? I really enjoyed meeting you today. Can I ask, you know, as in the next few weeks, as issues come up, we'd love to have you back on the show. So when issues come up and you want to get them back on, we'd love to have you. I really enjoyed your site and meeting you today. And we hope we can get you back on the show soon.
Yeah, right on. That'd be awesome. This was fun.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.